Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. Hi, my name is Aaron Snowell, and they call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions, as we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. We like to thank you for tuning in. We want to wish everybody a happy 4th of July holiday. It's a very, very special holiday. The weather is nice and it's warm outside. And we like to thank you on this as bring you the past, present, and future stars. But we like to bring in our radio aficionado who takes us on a carpet ride around the world, Bob Murray. How you doing live from Pottsville?
Hey, Aaron, good morning. Yeah, it's 4th of July in the United States, and kind of an interesting 4th to be sure. Just had a parade here in town, though, so people are, getting out, wearing masks, and being good, but man, we still have some coronavirus just going right through the world, countries and the U.S. and everything. But, we're here and we're ready to bring a good show to you, too, number one, and wishing everybody happy 4th of July.
Yeah, well, 4th of July today is a very special day in boxing. 110 years ago, which Jack Johnson and James Jeffries fought as fight of the century. And we'll be talking a little bit about that later on in the show. And that was 4th of July that we still remember today. So we're going to have our guests that we're doing the film and stuff with. They're going to be on there. And we're going to try to give you a little holiday show, Bob. So come on, take us around the world, Bob.
Right, there's not a lot happening, but we do want to actually go back and talk about something as we go along here. So we're talking first tonight, Mexico City, Mexico. It's going to be on Azteca TV. It's going to be at their gymnasium, also with ESPN Deportes. Super featherweights, Mauricio Lara, 18-2, 12 knockouts, and Alejandro Palmero, 8-5-1. They face off in the co-main event, which also features a 27-1 with 17 knockouts. Carlos Ocampo squaring off with Jorge Luis Garcia Perez, 18-2 with 16 knockouts, and that's a super welterweight fight as well. And now last week we were talking about the shows that happened in Mexico City, the Miguel Burchelt, and those fights ended up being non-sanctioned fights, non-approved fights. So even though people were watching these fights, Burchelt scored a fifth-round TKO, and they definitely came down as NC, no contest. So the same situation applies right now in Mexico. Nothing's changed, so we would just have to basically figure that they're going to be non-approved fights as well, but they're going to be on TV, and we'll see what happens from there. Also, tonight in Wiesbaden, Germany, unbeaten Fatih Altuntaya. He's 15-0, 14 knockouts, steps in with Rita Amine in the Cruiserweight finale. And Altuntaya is the promoter of that event, too. So we're seeing these things again where some of these people are putting on their own shows. And at the Bubble in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, next Tuesday on ESPN, the co-headliners are the Jose Zepeda, 31-2, 25 knockouts, versus Kendo Castaneda, 17-1, 8 KOs. It's a super lightweight clash. And also Andy Vinces, 23-1-1, 12 KOs. They'll face off with Luis Alberto Lopez Vargas, 20-2. It's a super featherweight battle. And on Thursday night, the heavyweight battle between Carlos Takam, 38-5-1, 28 KOs, and Jerry Forrest out of Lafayette, Louisiana, 26-3, 20 KOs. And Takam is replacing Jarrell Miller. Well, that news came on about an hour or so after we finished up our show last week, where Miller failed another urine test and just another black mark for Jarrell Miller, and then he loses another payday. And let's talk about two other fights coming up later in the week, next week, Friday in Pionki, Poland, on the sports channel there, Polish TV Sports. Damian Rzynski, 19-1-2, battles Otto Gomez, 19-2 for the Republic of Poland lightweight title. And the undefeated heavyweight Marcin Czibi, he's 20-0. He fights the 6-0 Kamil Wadziac. And also in the United Kingdom, they'll have their first sanctioned fight since the pandemic outbreak with a card on the BT Sports Studio lot in London. And it's going to be on BT Sport TV. And up top that night with the Brad Foster, he's 12-0-2 versus James Beach Jr. He's undefeated at 12-0. And they fight for the Commonwealth British Empire and the 3BFC British Super Bantamweight Crown. Also on that card, we'll see Hamza Shiraz. He's 10-0. He's trading punches with the 12-1 Paul Keane. And the winner will be the WBO European Super Welterweight Champion. So, you know, some things are happening. We talked even last week about that fight in Florida, the Ryan Martin fight. That was actually promoted by the Lopez's, Nelson Lopez Sr. and Jr. That was not part of that USA Fight Night. But it did move from Lakeland, Florida to Plant City, Florida, too. So there's a lot of wild things going on there as far as who's in and who's out. But, you know, before we move on, I just want to take one quick second to just make a note here. Congratulations and happy retirement to a great all-time champion, Typhon Moudry. 54-0, he retired. He fought his entire career at minimum weight, 105, and he's stepping down. But maybe someday we'll have Henry Haskup when he's back. Maybe I'll run down his career because that's just an amazing thing. We don't hear about him a lot. He's from Thailand. But, man, you can't argue with a 54-0 record. So good luck to him in his retirement.
Yeah, I know since Mayweather had trouted his 50-0 record, it's
not many guys with
all that. And Mayweather's in the news with it. About him saying about his part in history of boxing. Yeah, he's in the history books, for earning a lot of money and winning a lot of fights. But there were some great fighters before him that set the legacy down. And, you know, when they look at, they look at who you fought, were they champion, where they was, you know, Henry Haskop went down, the criterias of all of that in prior shows. So it's something to look at. But, Bob, I want to ask you a question. With that fight that wasn't sanctioned and it was televised, do you have any numbers on that?
Yes, I do. Here's what happened. There was a UFC fight that came on earlier. We're talking East Coast time here. So that actually had peaked at like 1.1 million. And then after that show was over, they moved to the fight to Mexico. So these were after 11 o'clock Eastern time, so past the prime time, but it peaked at 793,000 for the Burchell fight.
Wow.
800,000 after 11 o'clock at night. Yeah, so not bad number for what it was for a fight that didn't count.
That's way better than the numbers that top ranking getting on the ESPN fights,
right. And
numbers.
Speaking of that too, they also talk now about they're only going to be doing shows on Thursday night in August, the top ranked ESPN. They're going to be dropping the Tuesday, but basically what they're doing is you're going to see all the other sports are coming back. You're going to have NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, baseball, sprint season, 60 game season is going to be happening. So there'll be other things on Tuesday night. So they're kind of like, putting everything into Thursday nights to see what those numbers look like then next month.
Yeah, and if they're not, when all of this ain't going on, and if the numbers are low, but it's summertime,
right?
People are just starting to get out too, so we're going to see how those numbers adjust as, like you said, as time go on. But we want to talk a little bit about Jamil Baby Miller. I mean,
right.
You're talking about somebody that's on a roller coaster going downhill fast, quick, in a hurry. That's big baby.
Yeah.
You know, he should be crying night and day right now after fighting, getting ready and scheduled to fight in Madison Square Garden, Anthony Joshua. And he had tested positive for steroids then. You thought he would learn his lesson about taking steroids and what it does. And here he has another opportunity to come on national television after that and test positive again for such things. I mean, that's a rough note. And I don't know if he will be able to compete again at, the two strikes, three strikes, you're out. And, you know, that's really, really something if all of the commissions band together and say, hey, look, this guy had enough chances. He's trying to bend the rules to his favor, and they might just get rid of him out of it. You know what I mean? So that's
right,
something
right. It's going to be tough for anybody to want to promote him, too, because you don't know where you're going to get at the last minute. You know, here's another fight that, you know, it's coming up on Thursday, and, you know, 10 days before that, he's positive again. So who wants to promote that, too, you know?
Well, guys lose a lot of money, you know, and
right.
and promoting come all the way down the wire, spend for travel, you know, training expenses and all of that. And they put a lot of money out, and then he comes right close to fight time and he tests positive. Promoters lose a lot of money. And when when promoters are losing a lot of money in those cases, that's something that an athlete can do. You just have to watch what he sticks in his mouth for. We don't know how he's doing it, if he's taking a shot or whatever. But whatever you're doing, it ain't working, and they're catching you. So I think he needs to change. And but we had some conversation, Bob, last week about Tyson Fury. You know, as the week moved forward, he was something had happened with his manager, and they said that Tyson Fury said he was going to be his own person that's cutting the deal now along with Bob Arum because his manager was perceived as an underworld figure. So he had
right.
to get rid of him to the side. But right after that, Deontay Wilder's brother comes out, and he created this picture. You know, how long's that fight been? It's been, months, you know, and said
right.
that Tyson Fury's glove were manipulated, and he
right.
said that a doctor had
yeah.
said that there's no way that this can happen. I disagree. You know, a big guy like Tyson Fury, how much he weighs, when he turns that punch over and his weight is shifted right and he turns them knuckles over, I mean, you can do some major damage. And that's what happened to Dante Wilder. It wasn't the gloves. It was what in the glove called knuckle sandwiches. And he was eating them. Yeah, hey, look. You have to call it what you have to call it. It's knuckle sandwiches that he was eating them, and he was eating good and plenty of them. So what he has to learn how to do is stop eating them knuckle sandwiches. And when you learn how to stop eating them knuckle sandwiches, you get a different perspective of winning. And you have to be able to look at exactly what caused you to lose, and that's the way you go and you win again. But however, Bob, you know, the WBA has their convention. They're going into the fourth day today. Bob Arum and Don King, they were on that media conference thing online, so that's going good. So, Bob, everything else is, man, is on the up and up, and good news, Roberto Duran, he beat Covert. He was released from the hospital.
Yep.
It was 7 days. So he had a 7-day knockout and got out of the hospital. But, Bob, you know, we're going to get into our entertainment section for the holidays. And, you know, you hold on with us. We're going to bring our first guest, John Perry, playing Jack Johnson. John, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jack. I'm doing great.
All right.
Hey,
you know, just keep close to the phone, and there's an echo behind you. Hey,
okay,
look.
Okay, well, let me turn my speakerphone off.
Yeah, you're getting a little bad feedback here. Come on with it.
Huh?
We can hear you. Come on, you're on the air. So you got a special song, Jack Johnson, as an actor, as you're playing. Come on with the song. Hello?
Is anybody here?
Yeah.
Do you hear me, Aaron?
Yeah, come on with it. Keep coming. Come on with it.
Has anybody here heard of my old friend Jack Johnson?
Can you tell me what he's done? He defeated all the champions one by one. Our first black heavyweight champion. Now just look around at what he's done. Has anybody here heard of my old friend Muhammad? Muhammad Ali. He defeated all the champions one by one. Our first black heavyweight, three times champion. Now just look around at what he's done. Has anybody here heard of my old friend Don King? Can you tell me what he's done? He promoted a lot of champions, some old, some young, the greatest promoter of champions. Now just look around at what he's done. Has anybody here heard of my old friend Aaron Snowell? He trained a lot of champions, some old, some young, the greatest champer, the youngest trainer of champions. Now just look around. Now just look around at what he is done. And that's it.
Oh, boy. Oh, man, you did it. Hey, look, Bob, what do you think about that, Bob?
I like the lines like you.
Yeah, hey, look, that's
we get Aaron here. Yeah, trainers have you.
but you just hold on. We have another special guest, and thank you, John, for coming on the World Boxing Review, because we got
okay,
to click you out here. And here we go. We're gonna bring our other guests in here. Champ Place, how you doing? Hey, Bob?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, something happened with our next guest here. We gotta try to bring him in, you know. But yeah, Bob, you know, that's something very, very special is going on with that. And we'll bring our next guest, Champ Place. Come on, Champ Place, talk a little bit about yourself. How you doing? You're on
live. I'm doing great.
Come on with it, Champ.
All right. That's what I'm
live
talking about.
Texas,
how are all
Champ
y'all
Place
doing today?
Oh, we're doing
how
fine,
how are y'all
Champ
doing
we're
today?
July 20th,
July 4th, 2020. What crazy times we live in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, talk a little bit about yourself before you do this, the sequel to the movie. Come on, tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you get into rapping?
Okay, well, you know, I've been rapping since 1985. That's when I first actually started, you know, doing it. We started off break dancing and the whole, you know, the whole hip-hop thing when I was a kid in junior high school. You know, my dad was in the Army, so I lived all around, you know, Germany and New York, Colorado, Texas, you know, traveling around a lot. So, you know, it was mixed cultures. I grew up around with all types of cultures of people. And, you know, we got into this hip-hop thing. It's something we all had in common. So, you know, we got doing that. And I've been in behind the scenes, you know, for years. I'm sure you all have heard of Africa Bambaataa and the Soul Sonic Force, DJ Jazzy J. I was actually supposed to do some stuff with him back in like 1991, but we had some things happen in my life that prevented me from doing that. We'll put it like that. You know, I had some setbacks here and there over the years, and you know, we had some drama throughout, you know, the struggle.
Brother, let me tell you what Muhammad Ali used to say. Muhammad Ali used to say, "You white, but you can fight, and you white, and you can sure rap." So come on with the our movie music theme, and boy, this is something special. Champ, please come on with it. Let's hear it.
All right, let's get it going here. One second. All right, we're gonna start off with a sample that has you on here to begin the track. The example, and we'll get it going. Here it is.
Tonight, we'll be talking about the Jack Johnson story. The night is Jack Johnson, one of America's icons, who traveled all around the world. The first African-American champion, first inventor, an icon, a movie star, a trailblazer. There's so many things that describe Jack Johnson to make him second to none in the history of our.
All right, I'm about to school y'all on some things here. Y'all listen close.
I want you so you know he was the first black race. Jack Johnson, box of legend. Put him in the history book so we never forget him. Teach the children about the truly invented. It should be in school, being taught as a lesson. We will find a smile, shine like treasure. Live your life to the fullest, despite of the pressures. Triumph in the nation, or racist and hate. I wrote this so you know he was the first black race. Born in Galveston, Texas, in a time of the election. Just for being black, they were looking at a white. Pass for ex-slaves, a man to reach a proclamation. They didn't know they made a man who changed the nation. Last man standing at the battle, oh yes. Well, back to me, if I go fly, hopes that they all fell. We state to state as a traveling fire. Beat all the competition, so we set his heights higher. Tommy Burns, I to chase him all around the world. Became a shadow, talked to him at every turn. Said he couldn't find a black man, it was absurd. In Australia, Johnson finally got his turn. Birds are helpless, were beaten by the challenger. Rounds so relentless, they turned off the camera. Now up the world, he holds the heavyweight title. But there'll be no celebration upon his arrival. Got off the ship in San Francisco, no man's agreed. He was a brand new champ, but that's not how it was feeling. A few months passed, and he needed some action. A race to fight with Stanley Ketchel, the Michigan assassin. Rumors that the fight was fixed, that won't be the last time. And a 12th night to see now, too much for a black eye. Who would put this bad guy back in his place? Only the great white hope. Jim Jeffries was his name. Retired with undefeated ex-heavyweight champion. 20,000 gold pieces, got things happening. $101,000, 50 gold split. For 50,000 each for the motion picture. It was the battle of the statues in Reno, Nevada. People came from all over just to get a look at it. Then if Jeffries doesn't get them, then the gunman will. Broke the great white coast, and it's all still on film. July 5, there were nationwide race riots. Nobody knows for sure how many black people died then. Burning crosses, the wars of these losses. Fortunately, the victories were more than the cost was. Five-headed brothers through the sound and trumpets. Freedom by thousands, a thousand he done it. A white man with a rifle tried to break in and kill him. But luckily, he got stopped with folks who did it. Laughing and grinning, only wore the finest linen. Travel around the world touring with the finest women. Camari, stand and do regain. Bought a nightclub in Chicago, the cafe. The champion, fast cars and fast lanes. Nearly beat Barney Oldfield in a car race. Was a loss, but he was in the ring again. New Mexico extinguished the fireman, Jim Glenn. Nothing but trouble when he returned to Chicago. His wife committed suicide, but that wasn't all though. Cops closed his club, the shoes for debauchery. The two girls of out, he moved the camera into custody. Father was charged for violating the man act. The driver took the stand, ran him out with a damn rat. And it's 2 years and a day for all that. Left the country, went to Europe, but he couldn't come back. Went in France, it gave Moran a chance. Won by split decision in a 20-round match. Went to Havana, fought the challenger just for the 26 round, got knocked down, didn't get up. Hit to the fight to re-enter the country. To go see his mother, and she was promising money. Stayed in Spain until the war ended. Lived in Mexico a while, so he turned us up in. Spent almost a year for 11 work in prison. And then in the ranch to fix cars while he was in there. Special privileges for friends of the war. Allowing the box to even have private cooking. Did his time and put it behind him. Camacho Lewis, he really didn't like him. Loved a lot of women, won a lot of fights. Died when his car crashed in North Carolina.
How you like that?
Oh, Tim, please, my man. Look, Tim, please, wow. Man, that ain't that something, Bob? Ain't that
fucking
great?
That was,
that's the theme. That's to the theme to the movie pick. But hey, look, Champ Place, we gotta let you cut out because we got a lot of guests. We got Jack Johnson's niece, Linda Haywood, online. Come on, Linda. How are you doing? You know you met Linda before. Welcome into the World Box Review Radio Show. Ha ha! That was Champ Place, Linda.
I heard it when I was waiting to join. I remember when he performed that in front of me. I was very, very moved. That was absolutely fantastic. How are
you? Thank you very much. Great. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain. I can't complain. I'm doing just great.
Well, we're still breathing, right? So.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Linda Haywood, we want to thank you for coming so early on the morning on the World Boxing Review Radio Show. But Champ Place, we're going to have to click you out, and thank you so much for that while we talk with Linda Haywood about this special day. This is a very special day, July 4th, when your uncle fought Jim Jeffries for Fight of the Century. What does this mean to your family, the Jack Johnson family?
Well, I really can't put it into words, but I'll try. All of my uncle's accomplishments were just simply mind-boggling, because every time I think about how he lived his life and the contributions he made to boxing, I am just so proud and sometimes overwhelmed, but we are very proud of him, and even more so that he does belong to us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I got my encounter where I learned about Jack Johnson when I was a kid in Deer Lake, Pennsylvania. Muhammad Ali, you know, Muhammad Ali had said that when he beat Sonny Liston, he had used a punch that Stephen Fletcher, who was hanging out with your uncle, had discovered this punch that your uncle told him about called the Yanker Punch. And Ali said he used that Yanker Punch to beat Sonny Liston. So, you know, Ali used to talk about your uncle all the time, and he did some things.
Yeah, I know. I know. I've heard different times he's spoken about him. He was actually in awe of my uncle because of how he didn't have any fear. He didn't have any fear with anybody, and he went about his day or his life as he pleased, and that was at a dangerous time. That was a dangerous time to be a black man in America. In fact, it's still a dangerous time, and we are here 110 years later, because it was 110 years ago, July 4th, 1910, that he did beat the retired champion, Jim Jeffries, to retain his heavyweight title. But yeah, I heard Muhammad Ali talking about him, and it made me laugh because he was saying, who was in his ear? Who was making him act the way he acts and making him talk the way he talked? He said, Jack Johnson, by himself, by himself. He said he just couldn't believe it. I can't believe it either.
No, yeah, Ali used to talk about him all the time. He had tremendous respect for him, like so many people in boxing does. But let's bring Will Williams into the World Boxing Review Radio Show. Will Williams, how you doing? Actor, producer, how you doing, Will? You got Linda Haywood on the phone.
I'm doing great. How are you all? How are you, Linda?
Fine. I'm fine, Will. It's good to hear your voice. It's good to hear all of you all. I remember when I was in North Carolina, and we just had a ball. Man, y'all like to walk me to death. Y'all had me walking over here, walking over there. And took me to where the car hit the pole, and we walked on, you know, down the road over there where the car came around the bend, and we took pictures. Then we went to St. Agnes Hospital, and more. I'm telling you, that was really amazing. That was amazing for me to have been there and experienced that.
Yes, it was. Go ahead, Will Williams. Come on with it. What does, as you being an actor, producer, and things, what does Jack Johnson mean to you with this, all the stuff that we're doing and the film? And, you know, we had Champ Place on there, and we have Linda with us, a part of our team. What does this mean to you, Will?
Well, I tell you, you know, something Linda pointed out, 110 years ago, July 4th, when he fought Jeffries and beat him, you know, like she was saying, I just cannot imagine. It's one thing to be a great champion and to win, but to win when you have so many people against you, especially if it's something like racism, and you got everybody's against you, and you can still get in the ring and handle your business, that takes a very special...
Courageous. Absolutely.
I mean, I can't even imagine the courage and strength that... I mean, it takes enough courage and strength to be in the ring fighting one opponent,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't just have one opponent at that fight. You know, you got so many people against him. And for him to smile and to enjoy life and enjoy the moment with that going on, that's one of a kind.
Yeah,
that's an amazing
person
right there.
Yeah, it is. And I was reading an article the other day, and man, he wrote an article from CNN, and he talked about how several times when my uncle won the fight, how he started race riots all across the United States. And I remember my mother telling me that when I was a little kid, that when he had fights, that it caused race riots. And that was incomprehensible to me because I was a little kid and I couldn't imagine how could my uncle fighting cause such anger that it would cause people to turn against one another. And as I got older, I understood it was because he was a black man, a very fearless black man in the United States, and people were angry that he could prevail even under circumstances. I read that people would ridicule him and call him names and boo, but ultimately they had to admit that he won the fight fair and square, and we have to give him his due respect. But to live at a time like that, when black people were being killed just because they were black, I just shake my head because I can't understand. My family and I, we've talked about this, about how nobody touched him. Nobody laid a hand on him. When black men were being beat, they were being shot, they were being lynched, and he walked about and lived his life, and nobody laid a hand on him. Now that, you can't even have, there's no word for that. How is it that he managed to make it through without being killed?
Right. And Linda, you're right. And Will, we're going to have to click you out to bring our next guest in. And Linda, you can hang in there while we bring a great referee from Nevada in. Our special guest, Tony Weeks. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing fine,
Welcome.
Brother. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, well, I got Linda Haywood, who's Jack Johnson's great niece. She's going to hang in there because we're going to ask you some questions, and then we're going to get you to talk a little bit about Jack Johnson. We'll keep Linda on while we ask you. You know, last week you had the opportunity, or a couple weeks ago, to referee during this pandemic at the first fight that came out on ESPN. Tell us a little bit about that experience, Tony. What, you know, TV, you know, you done refereed some of the best that ever done it.
Yes, it was, you know, it's always an honor and a privilege and a pleasure for me to be able to participate in the craft that I love, which is refereeing fights and boxing. Yes, it was definitely a different atmosphere. No crowd. First of all, they had to implement the safety procedures, and that we would come in the day before the fight and be tested and quarantined at the hotel at the MGM Grand. And we were all confined in this bubble to where everybody that was in that arena was tested and tested negative. And, yes, it was definitely a different atmosphere without the crowd. You know, and you know for yourself, being in a lot of the big fights of the past, there's a certain electricity, there's a certain excitement when you come into the arena for a championship fight. You know, that was definitely missing. However, on the positive side of that, if I may say, for the fans, you know, it gives the fans a different perspective of the fighters themselves. In other words, what I mean by that, where, you know, they can actually hear what's going on in that ring, the magnitude of the punches, the blows, the sounds that the fighters make when they get hit, or when they delivering a blow, what the cornermen are saying to the fighters, the fighters are saying to the cornermen, what we are saying as the referees to the fighters or the cornermen. So on the positive side, it, you know, really gives a different perspective for the fans, and I think that the fans could maybe appreciate what really happens in that ring.
Can you see the difference in the fighters, you know, from the big fights with large crowds? Now, you know, that you have this under your belt, can you see how no fans being there, how's it affecting fighters? They're getting hit, or, you know, the roar of the crowd could change the swing of a fight, you know?
Absolutely.
Are you witnessing that? Because you're up close, you know. There's nobody closer than you. You know, a lot of times TV don't pick up those kind of angles. Could you identify with that when you were in there, that, you know, that it has a little effect on them, the crowd
you
not
know,
being there?
Not really. Well, you know, each fighter is different, as you know. I didn't really detect anything, because these guys are fighters. They're focused. They're professionals at what they do. So no matter what atmosphere that they're in, you know, they're going to be professional. They're going to perform in a professional manner. And I think it's for the time being right now, it's almost like being in a gym. And, you know, guys are in there sparring, you know, and you know, you hear this, you hear that, but the guys are still focused on what's happening in that ring and what's their opponent in front of them. So, you know, so far I haven't really detected anything different from any of the fighters.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. I wanted to hear your perspective because, you know, refereed some big heavyweight title fights too. You had Dante Wilder when he won the title. You refereed his fight. Mm-hmm. Tyson Fury, you refereed a fight with him. And with Jack Johnson's niece on the phone, you talk a little bit about them two fights, and talk a little bit about Jack Johnson. You know, the day is where the fight of the century happened 110 years ago. Can you give us your perspective of that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Jack Johnson, yeah, he was the original OG. He was the original OG.
I appreciate you saying that, because that is so very true. That is so very true. Yeah.
And
never heard anybody put it like that.
Well, you know, yeah, you know, I'm from Brooklyn. We got to keep it real. And but sister, I just wanted to first of all, before I go on, I just want to, you know, tell you that, you know, you are bred from a great pedigree, and I'm so proud of Jack Johnson and what he accomplished. And, you know, I just wanted to say that to you.
Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. But no, yeah, you know, like it was stated so many times during that time and era when black men and women were being lynched and murdered, you know, at the drop of a hat. You know, here this man comes along so bold, and to be able to get in the ring and physically beat up another white man, you know, took a tremendous amount of courage. I mean, when I look at the films, when I look at the photographs of the arena, and you see thousands and thousands of people there.
That is amazing.
It's like, wow. Yes, this man has to walk in that arena and walk out that arena.
Yes.
You know, and then be able to walk the streets. And, you know, it's just incredible. He definitely set the tone
people always say, when I've read about him, or even people talk about him, they say he was ahead of his time. He was ahead of his time. For him to be able to wake up like that, and he did not give a damn how you felt about him, what you thought of him. He lived his life, and he did whatever he thought he wanted to do. And sometimes people say, oh, well, you know, he was so arrogant. He was he just was uppity. And, you know, my mother had said, we were doing an interview with CBS. This was like back in 2008 or 2010. And my mother said during the interview, she said, Jack Johnson was defiant. And I said, Mama, I don't mean any disrespect, but he wasn't defiant. He was just being himself. That's what I told her. He was being himself. You know, anytime you spoke up and you were bold and you were your own man, especially a black man, you know, white people always said you were being defiant, you were being uppity. You can't be defiant or uppity. You're being yourself. You're being yourself.
Absolutely.
He didn't have to bow to anybody. He was good at his craft, and people respected him for being good at his craft, because if you won, you won. There wasn't no trick back then. You couldn't put stuff in your gloves, and you couldn't, you know, do all this extra stuff that people say sometimes boxers did. And even before, you know, they started using gloves, he fought bare fist. Can you imagine bare knuckle fighting? That's when they would go 35 and 40 rounds.
Yeah.
40 rounds with just your bare knuckles. That was crazy.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Let me cut in and to elaborate on what you're saying, Linda, is that not only did he fight bare knuckles, in the black community, they had this thing called Battle Royale, is that they put a bunch of people in the boxing ring and cover your eyes and fight with bare knuckles. And your uncle
And the last man standing.
That. Yeah, he was always the last man standing. But, you know, they don't give him his business savvy, too. You know,
no.
He was a pioneer when it came to businesses. You know, he drove fancy cars when most people were horse and buggy. He was the first one to race car burning Oldfield after the Jeffries fight. Oldfield challenged him. Jack said, yeah. And talking about Brooklyn, Tony, he raced him up there to Brooklyn racetrack. So, you know, and then he had a business that he opened in Black Wall Street. You know, Chicago had a business called Black Wall Street in Chicago. He had the first business. He had his gyms. He had his nightclubs. And he had his hotels. You know, his buddy from Pittsburgh got him into the hotel business, and he opened a hotel.
No, I missed that.
And there's so much that he did. The stuff over in France that he did in the theater, Jack, or something. But at near his final end, he was doing stuff in museums. So, you know, he understood who he was, and even when, you know, you have ups and downs, but he knew that he was something special in museums that he was doing his work in at when he passed.
Absolutely.
He knew where he was going to end up, you know.
Absolutely.
But, Tony, talk a little bit about Tyson Fury, and who beat Dante Wilder. You refereed both of them. And give us your inside look on that.
Well, the first time I refereed Tyson Fury, it was in Germany, O2 Arena, when he won the title from Klitschko. And, you know, the one thing that stood out as far as the ring, the boxing ring, it was the biggest boxing ring I've ever been in, you know. But I was glad because I was in there with two giants, you know. But
where was
Tyson
the
Fury
ring at?
This is in Germany at the O2 Arena.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And but Tyson Fury, he amazed me for his size. He's pretty agile. And he's a real good boxer. You know, I was really surprised, at the way he handled himself in the ring and whether, you know, his boxing technique. He really has the talent as a boxer, as a heavyweight, which, you know, for his size, you know, makes it kind of unique in a way.
When was this fight? When did this fight take place?
I think that was down in 2015.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Tyson Fury, isn't he a little heavier? Wasn't he the heavier boxer? And he ultimately beat Deontay Wilder? Is that who Wilder lost his championship to?
Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
So Tyson Fury's the heavyweight champion now.
Yeah, the WBC party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What, Tony, talk a little bit about, you know, Dante Wilder. You referee when he won the title. So talk a little bit about him.
Yes, Dante Wilder, I refereed the fight when he won the title here in Vegas. And, you know, this guy is a natural power puncher. And, you know, Aaron, as you know for yourself, that's something you can't teach. That's something you have to be born with. And power that this guy possesses is unreal. With the crowd there, I could still feel, you know, the blows that were landing. And, He's just unbelievable strength and power that this man has, and determination You know, that, which is more important than anything, he had the determination in his mind to become champion. He had the determination in his mind to, no matter what force was in front of him, he was going to knock it down. So I was very, very impressed with Dante.
Yeah, and Tony,
do you know how he started fighting?
No, you know it's funny. You reminded me when you said that. When Dante was training for the Olympics, I had went to the Olympic Training Center, and as the fighters were coming in, you know, you had what's the brother name out of D.C. There was a couple of fighters there that were destined to medal, you know, and he was the least likely one to medal. And I told Dante about this because he had to. I said, when I see you again, you got to sign this picture. I took a picture with all the Olympic team, and he was in that picture. And when I looked at him as an Olympian, he wasn't that big, and you know, he didn't have that build like he has now. And so, you know, they were saying that he's probably not going to medal. You know, he's probably going to lose in the first round, and look what happened. You know, so you never know where life brings you.
Yeah, they told me how he started fighting.
I'm sorry.
No, I was told why he started fighting. Why he became a boxer, and I'm kind of surprised that you were unaware of that, because
his daughter started fighting. Yeah.
Yeah, because she has a birth defect. I forgot what it is, but said he started fighting because he had to make money to support her and to pay for her medical bills. So that's an interesting take, where a man starts to become a boxer for an ultimate purpose. You don't usually hear stories like that, but he did what he had to do. You know, he was in the White House with when Trump gave the pardon for my uncle. He was there along with Lennox Lewis, and I got a chance to see him up close. So very, very tall, very quiet and soft-spoken from what I could see when we were there. He didn't really talk much. He didn't really talk much, but he was good at his craft, apparently, for him. Who did he win the title from? Are you able to tell me that?
Stephon Laverne. He was a champion at the time.
Oh, and he Deontay Wilder took the title from his stepfather. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Look,
I'm sorry.
No, not his stepfather. It wasn't his stepfather.
No.
Laverne.
That's the name, Stephon Laverne. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the name. That's the name you're talking about.
Yeah.
He's talking about Stephon Laverne.
Yeah, but Laverne was the champ, the WBC champion that he took the title from. But, you know, Tony, there's a lot of things going on with Dante Wilder. You know, it has something to do with egos. I remember when Mike Tyson, you know, when he lost in Tokyo, and how we bring him back. We knew realistically what happened, and it was failure to prepare. When you fail to prepare, you prepare for failure, not being in the right shape for that night. And a lot of things go into it. What Dante Wilder has to do, he got to do what if he's going to, in this rematch that he has coming up, if he's going to overcome what happened to him, he has to stop making excuses. He got to have to get back to that Olympian spirit where you refuse to lose and you want to learn. Life's about living and learning. If you live to be 100, you're going to learn to be 100. And one, or even that 100. So he got to go back to the drawing board, and it's hard work. If you want to be heavyweight champion, you have to learn how to fight the better fight. And earlier in the show, when me and Bob were talking and going over all this, he has to realize that there was nothing wrong with the gloves. It was what was in the glove called knuckles. And he was getting knuckle sandwiched, and he was eating them.
That's it.
And he has to learn how to stop getting hit. And the reason when people say things like that, you know, y'all do a great job. As a referee, you know, there's a lot of pressure on you, y'all, to do that split-second timing. But you're trained to do that. You have to make the right decision, the right call in milliseconds. Like, they have to protect themselves with millisecond timing, offensive punch, a defensive punch. But when you know that Nevada Commission, which is a great commission that you're a referee for, to say that a glove is tampered with like that, boy, oh boy, you know, you're putting a whole bunch of people that are on the line. And you elaborate, I'm going to follow, just say some steps. You know, always in the fighter's dressing room, there's inspectors.
Absolutely.
Once them inspectors look at and wrap your hand and they give you the gloves, them inspectors are with the fighter all the way till they come into the ring.
And when they
y'all come into the dressing room and give the instruction to let them know that you're the referee, so don't nobody imposter step in the ring, you know, saying that the referee in the fight. And once that fight starts happening, y'all are the sole judge. But y'all do tap for the cup. Y'all do feel the gloves before the fight starts.
Yes.
Go through all of that, you know, because for guys to say this, I hate that when it's happened. And some people be around boxing, but they don't really see what's happening. We are professionals. We understand the procedure that protects the fighter and everybody. And go down a little line and talk about some of that stuff, Tony, as a professional.
Well, you know, going back to the gloves, you know, as you know, days before the fight, the gloves are fitted for the fighters. You know, the fighters choose their gloves. There's several gloves that's laid out, and the fighters choose their gloves. This is pretty much done, you know, at the weigh-in or after the weigh-in. And once the fighter chooses his gloves, he has – this is his first pair, the ones he's going to wear in the, for the fight, and he has a second pair that he chooses to, you know, just in case something happens to the glove during the fight. They can go to the second pair. Now, those gloves are in the possession of the athletic commission from that point on. And they are, once the fighters come to the arena, the inspectors deliver the gloves to the fighters. The gloves are wrapped in plastic and sealed and signed. And that seal is not broken until the gloves are delivered to the fighters in that dressing room. And like you said, yes, the inspectors are right there watching everything, the hands being wrapped, the gloves being put on, the tape that's being wrapped around the gloves. So everything is being scrutinized to the T. And like once they come in that ring, excuse me, they back up. Once the gloves are fitted and put on the fighters, the inspectors then sign off on it. So the signature is on that on the tape part of the gloves, and so when they come into the ring, yes, as the referee, you'll see the referees go over to the corner and check the gloves of the fighters, make sure everything's right, check. You know, you got the mouthpiece, all the protective equipment that the fighter needs to have when he does the fight. So everything is scrutinized to the T, and there's a steady procedure that's always used for every fight, no matter what the magnitude of the fight is.
Yeah, and Tony, we got 30 seconds,
that's
man.
Good.
What
that's
a great, great time talking to you, you know. We got 30 seconds left in this show. We want to thank everybody, and we want to thank you, Linda E. Haywood, Jack Johnson's great niece, for coming on the World Boxing Review, and what a great show that we had. And also, Tony, we want to thank you. Man, you do such a great job all the time for coming on the World Boxing Review radio show and talk about everything that you talked about today. Beautiful. Thank you for coming on. And Bob, man, what another great show. We'd like to thank you, Bob, for bringing us around the world, man, on that magic carpet ride. And we'd like to thank everybody for tuning in to the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And also, we missed our boxing historian, Henry Hascott, but he's taking care of the little ones in the ballpark. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, happy 4th of July, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.